Welcome to For the Long Run, the podcast exploring the why behind what keeps runners running long, strong, and motivated. I'm your host, Jonathan Levitt. Through personal and professional connections in the running world, I have the privilege of getting to know some amazing athletes. I've always been fascinated by the psychological aspect of running, and this podcast is aimed at exploring this and much more. I hope you enjoy. This episode is sponsored by Jonji. Jonji is a local to Boston running apparel company dedicated to exploring, connecting, and giving back through running. Inspired by travel, informed by function, and built for adventure, Jonji makes running essentials to equip you wherever you run or roam. The company was founded on the core belief that water is a human right and donates 2% of their sales to supporting clean water organizations around the world. I've known the two co-founders of Jonji for over 5 years, and it's been a privilege to see them grow and increase the level at which they've been able to give back to the running community and to the world in general. Welcome back. I have Erica Kemp joining me on the podcast today. Erica, thanks so much for taking some time to chat.
No problem. Happy to be here. Sort of.
For sure.
Virtual.
Happy to be on the screen. Well, awesome. So first question is often a challenging one. So we'll start there. Who is Erica?
Erica is a 25-year-old New Jersey native, actually born in Japan, but raised in South Jersey. She got tired of winter, so she went down south for a few years for college and then came back up north to Boston to get the seasons and continue her running career. She enjoys video games, movies, music, all the things, books, what have you. She is a formerly trained barista and hasn't always loved running, but definitely loves it now.
Awesome. And we were introduced by a friend and teammate of yours, Dana Giordano, who is a teammate of the BAA high performance team. So how long have you been on that team?
I joined the BAA High Performance team in September of 2018, so just about 2 years ago.
Awesome. And do you remember your first run in life?
In life? I thought you were going to say first run in Boston, because that was like a crazy one.
We'll get there.
First run in life. Was my freshman, well, I mean, I guess if you count like middle school mile tests, I guess that was the first actual run. We cheated and set the school record. We just cut through the soccer fields and ran like a 5:30 mile at like age 12.
Destined for greatness.
Right, for sure. In high school, I missed the first few weeks of the track season because I didn't think I was actually going to do it. My soccer coach, like, not bullied me, but definitely like heavily persuaded me into finally coming out for the team. So that was probably the first time I ever like actually went for a run.
And fast forward a little bit, when did you realize that you were pretty good at it?
I would say towards the end of my first track season, freshman year, since I had never done track before, my coaches just put me in every event in like ascending order. So we started with a 200 at a meet and it was like not impressive. So then they just kept bumping me up in distance at every meet until I finally placed at an adequate position for them, whatever that is.
What was that distance?
It ended up being the mile for a long time, just because I was so new to running. They were like, I don't know, like 3,200 is kind of long when you like haven't run before. But then that spring season, my last race in the dual meet, they finally put me in a 3,200 and I ran like 11 minutes and they were like, oh man, like she's a distance runner.
That's awesome. It's funny to hear you explain it that way. The majority of guests on this podcast have been ultra runners. And what was fascinating is that Dana's episode was one of the most popular ones. So it tells me, you know, different opinions and different distances can be a good thing for sure. But it's funny to hear 3,200 being described as long distance. But when you're running it at the speeds that you run it at, that's about as far as you need to go.
Right. And when you just started out and it's like literally the longest you've ever done.
Yeah. So fast forward a few years, you mentioned your first run in Boston was an epic one. Tell me more about that.
It was an epic fail for sure. I had just moved here. All of my teammates were out of town and I hadn't even met them yet because they were all out of town. My coach was out of town. So I was supposed to just go out for a nice, easy 8-mile run. And I didn't realize that the streets in Boston, like, don't make sense. I thought I could just go straight and like just follow my way back. And then I don't know I ended up. I like looked at the map.
Probably Beacon Hill. Like,
yeah. I was like, oh, I'll just run towards the river and then I'll just go home. And my 8-mile run on a Monday turned into a 13.5-mile run. And the worst part was I was like 10 miles in and like so tired and so lost. And I asked this kid how to get like back to my neighborhood. And he was like, oh, I just started at BU. I've only been here for 2 days. I don't know either. And I was like, great, now we're all lost.
Yeah, for those that don't know, Boston, downtown Boston is set up, it was set up for horses. And it's really easy to get out of some of the neighborhoods, but it's really hard to get in. There are a bunch of one-ways and everything is basically concentric circles around Beacon Hill. And it doesn't make any sense. And half of the roads are one way and they like go one way. There aren't like one way roads going the other way.
And then the one that got me was some of the streets just changed name, like at random intersections. So depending on what block you're on, you don't actually know if it's the same street. But you
so
know,
recently I learned, definitely recently I learned that as you go down Comm Ave, near the pedestrian mall, the streets are in ascending alphabetical order as you go further towards the common from Kenmore. So that's a little fun fact.
Yeah.
You'll notice that now.
Will I remember that? Maybe not.
Hopefully. Awesome. So exactly. So how did you get linked up with the BAA?
So when I was finishing up my college career, the former coach of the BA, Rick Santos, he used to coach at Iona. He had reached out and expressed some interest. They were going through turnover with getting a new head coach and getting some new higher ups and just trying to sign some new people. So Rick reached out and expressed a lot of interest, which meant a lot to me that like, I hadn't even, like, I thought I could still perform better, but he had already expressed so much, like, interest and, like, believed I had a lot of potential. So once I finished my eligibility, I flew up to Boston, and it was basically, like, a college visit, which was, like, the wildest part for me. It was, like, the college recruiting system all over again. Like, you spend a couple days there, they take you through a day in the life, you meet some of your potential teammates and like go out to eat. And it was like kind of fun to just redo that whole college recruiting experience.
That's cool. What did it mean to you that you mentioned that he believed that you had a lot more potential?
Yeah. So like I had done well in college. Like I had a conference title and plenty of top three, like all conference finishes. I mean, it didn't help my case that like Molly Seidel was in my conference. So, you know, super stoked with my second and third places.
Sure.
But still like and then at NCAAs, I finished top 8 once, but I was top 10 a lot. So I just wasn't sure if like my resume spoke to like what I could achieve later. Cause I definitely had a lot of potential and I was like very consistent and getting better every year. But I wasn't sure if like professional coaches were just looking at like a finishing sheet and they were like, okay, like I want like the top 5. So it meant a lot to me that Ricardo was like, okay, she wasn't like top three, but she's very consistent and she's getting better. So like, I want to take a chance on her.
And where has that led you?
I mean, it led me to Boston with the BAA. We now have a new coach, Mark Carroll, which has been great. It's unfortunate that our season got cut short with him because I think we would have all ran really well this summer. But I mean, since college, I've won a national title on the roads. I've had huge PRs in just about every track event I've tried. I still haven't run a 15 yet, but I had like a 40-second PR in the 5K. And I've done some distances I never thought I would race. So I think I've done quite a bit since then.
And what's your favorite distance?
I think my favorite is 5K, but that also could just be because it's the one I have the most experience with. So it feels like a very comfortable place to be in. Mm-hmm. But it is fun.
I agree. I think it's one of my favorite distances too. I definitely want to get into some 5Ks this fall, and I feel like it's the kind of thing that you can solo time trial a little easier than some other distances that people might be doing. So I want to hear from you. How do you break up a 5K? What's your process?
I think my process is I break it up into like a 2 mile and a 1 mile. Like, I just don't even count that first 200 because you're just, you know, trying to get in a position. But then I think of running like a strong but like semi-controlled 2 mile, or at least like feeling like you have your legs under you with a mile to go. And then it's like mentally just kind of an all-out last mile. And then you're done.
Yeah, the sort of, it's just that simple. And then the pesky point one, but that's sprinting anyways.
Right. So, I just think like in a 5K, the mile is where all the things happen. So like you just really have to be like ready to go that last mile.
Yeah, it's definitely it's like that fine balance between feeling good enough and feeling horrible. And like when do you straddle yeah. that line and go over the line?
Right.
Why do you think you like running? Let's start there.
I think I like it because you get so much out of it, like mentally and physically, at least I have. Like, I think it's great to like be in shape and everything, but mentally I think it's been a really good like exercise and just like learning how to deal with stress and like practicing routines and all kinds of things that have definitely like helped in other aspects of life. And like you get the instant gratification of like being proud of yourself for like having actually gone for the run or like PR'd in that race or like what have you. But you also get like the delayed gratification of, you know, like seeing progression over the years, which is something that's super cool. So yeah, there's just like so much to get out of it.
Definitely. Is gratitude something you practice intentionally, or does it sort of happen organically for you?
I would say it's definitely more organic, but every now and then, especially like if I'm just feeling like super overwhelmed or super stressed or something, then I am a little more intentional about it. And it's like, well, why are you stressing out when like there's all of these things and like, look where you are, and just like trying to bring it back to, you know, like being grateful for everything, because it definitely makes it easier to deal with it.
For sure. What are some of the, you mentioned lessons in running being sort of extrapolated to life. What are some of the top lessons you've learned through running that have helped you in life?
I think one of the first ones is definitely just like strength, like mental strength in general. And like how important your mindset is in like affecting your mood, like how you feel physically, because if you just like have a bad attitude or like are kind of down and then you go out for a run, like your body kind of follows suit. And then all of a sudden, like you feel heavy and tired and lethargic, but like by just like focusing on your mentality and like having a better attitude, you can turn your whole day around. And I think like learning how to do that in like hard workouts where like, I know it's going to be hard. I know it's going to hurt, but bringing a better attitude to it makes it a little easier. I kind of carry that through to other things. And it's like, well, having a bad attitude's not going to make you feel any better. So why don't we work on that?
Definitely. And that has a ton of carryover to life in general, but particularly life in 2020.
For sure.
We'll start with the training side of 2020. What has that been like for you?
It's been different, of course. I think it's been kind of fun in that it's just like completely uncharted territory. I mean, like I said, we got a new coach in December. So like this entire year has been like, you know, kind of in uncharted waters, but definitely with like being in Boston during a pandemic and having like kind of, I would say we have harsher restrictions than some more like rural states. Like Boston shut down pretty early back in like March and April, and they closed down a lot of parks and masks are mandatory pretty early on. So it's been kind of fun just figuring out how to work around it and how to work with it. Which kind of takes my mind off of like the actual hard training part. Cause it's like, well, this is new. So we have no idea how this is right. supposed to feel.
And how does the change in like the track trials didn't happen this June. And hopefully they happen next summer. How has the sort of moving goalposts impacted how you've been able to stay motivated and engaged with some higher training?
I did really well for a while. So once we heard that like the trials were pushed back, we were like, okay, like it's fine. We're just gonna take advantage of the fitness we've built and we'll do some time trials and maybe hope for some late summer races and like just like got ourselves pumped. But after like 3 or 4 months of just training so hard and doing these like epic workouts and then not having anything on the calendar, I just kind of like sat down with my coach and was like, I don't know if I can do this for another like 6 weeks of like training this hard and psyching myself up with like no goal in sight. So he was like, don't worry about it. Like if the motivation's not there, like it's not there, like you're healthy, you're fit. Just, he basically gave me the rest of August off as far as like workouts went. And he was like, run when you feel like it, like enjoy yourself, find some joy in it again, like find your motivation and like we'll regroup in September.
And so where are you from a motivation standpoint these days?
A lot better now. Honestly, having those like 3.5 weeks of no workouts, it like gave me that like itch again to want to run hard. Cause I was just like running easy and running whatever distance I felt like on the day. But now I'm like craving that structure and excited to like put on my flats and go out and do a harder effort. So I think it was good.
Cool. And how has, so have you been training with the team or has it been mostly individual?
So for the first, like, I would say 7 or 8 weeks, it was individual. And that was so strange knowing that we were all home and we were all in Boston, but we were told by the club that we should just kind of like keep to ourselves and like really keep our distance and just like run on our own, do our workouts on our own for that 8 week period until we saw like how the city kind of handled everything. So that was super strange, especially when I started to like see Dana like on the river and we were doing the same workout, but like we weren't supposed to be doing it together. So we would just kind of run past each other and wave. And it was like, this could be so much nicer if we were together, but like when the time is right. But now we're back to working out as a team.
It must be so hard to go from structured workouts with teammates who are similar fitness to not having that. Dana messaged me a couple weeks ago and was like, hey, because we both are down the Cape or have been down the Cape a lot. And she was like, what are the chances you could pace me tomorrow? And I was like, well, I can't keep up with you, but if you want, if you meet on a bike, sure. Right. So I think that was like one of the first workouts she had done with somebody else in a while. And
right.
I can't imagine like going from having that every single day to just like cold turkey.
It was weird for sure.
Do you think that once it's back to a bit more normal, that there's going to be like a renewed sense of appreciation and gratitude, and with that, you know, maybe a little extra oomph?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the last couple of weeks, we finally like have everyone back and everyone's starting to work out. So we've been meeting on workout days with our team is like fairly small. We only have like 6 or 7 people. But it's been so nice. Like even last Friday, I want to say it was, Dana and I weren't working out yet, but we still like came to watch Elena's workout and just like see Mark and the guys. And it was so good to just like have everyone there. And we were like, wow, this is what it's like to like have a team. And you just kind of felt like giddy, like the first day of school when you like get to see all your friends again. Yeah. And you're like, oh my God, I'm not alone.
What does the Boston running community mean to you?
It means a lot. I think it's like such a, not, I don't want to say weird, but like I did not really know much about Boston before I came here, other than like the marathon, obviously, but I didn't realize there was this huge like running culture, and it's like not just pros. Like there is a huge scene for anyone and everyone who loves running. And I think it's super cool that you can always connect with someone or find someone to run with if you're like anywhere around the city of Boston.
Yeah. And I think what I love most about it is that, like you said, there are so many different speeds and skills and paces and places to work out and hills and flat areas and all that stuff. I got into a groove pre-COVID, obviously, where I was doing most of my runs with somebody, and it was a different person every day of the week, which served a pretty good purpose. Like my easy runs or recovery runs would be with coworkers, and I have some fast friends that I would do workouts with and long runs. And it's just like, yeah, there's a person for every run.
Which is so nice. I feel like you can't find that everywhere.
Yeah. I forget who called Brighton the Flagstaff of the East. It was probably Justin Britton.
Oh, that's funny. I dig it though.
Yeah, I think it's true. Thanks again to Jonji for sponsoring this episode. As a runner, you know the importance of hydration, but you might not know that almost 800 million people lack access to drinking water. By working together, we can create viable solutions, and collectively, we can have a greater impact. The Jonji Collective is one way to do that. It's a membership that earns you a ton of perks like discounts on gear and first access to new collections. It's also a community of adventurous runners around the world. 100% of the membership fee goes towards supporting clean water programs. I'm a member and enjoy knowing that it is a small step that each of us can take that when pooled together can have quite an impact. It's also great knowing that once the world reopens, I'll have runners in almost every city to enjoy a run with when I'm on the road in a new place. If you use the code FTLR, like for the long run, you can join the Jonji Collective for $50. You'll receive a free singlet as well as a special members-only discount for life. Every dollar from that will go towards supporting clean water programs. I hope you'll join me. I'm instructed to ask you by one of your teammates, as a professionally trained barista, what is the best coffee in Boston?
Oh, wow. While I am qualified to answer that question, I don't think it's fair if I do. Just for the sole fact that I haven't tried everywhere. I don't think it's fair of me to like pick my favorite coffee shop without actually having had all of them. And I'm also incredibly biased to things that are within like a 3-minute walk of my house.
That makes sense.
So like I love Temptations Cafe in Coolidge Corner, but they're also across the street, and I know the baristas and they're super great people. But I mean, there's not a lot of like, there's so many cool coffee shops in Boston, and I think everyone does a fairly good job. I haven't been anywhere where I was like, oh, that was terrible. I mean, even Dunkin's not even good, but it is good.
Whoa. All right. We may have to end the podcast now. I love Dunkin'.
I have Dunkin' on my desk right now. It's not the best, but like, there's something about it.
Yes, it's usually pretty good. So along similar lines, going from coffee to food, your Instagram profile is fairly colorful when it comes to what's on your plate. How has nutrition always been a big piece of a big focus for you?
I wouldn't say it's been always been a big focus. It definitely started in college. My sophomore year when I moved off campus, just because I lived off campus, so it was kind of annoying to go to the dining hall. Like at State, we did have an athletes only dining hall, and they did do a great job of having tons of healthy options, but it was more just inconvenient to go back to campus after class to eat dinner. And then that summer I also took an online nutrition course for one of my summer classes that we obviously learned a lot and had to do these food diaries. And I was more shocked that I thought I ate a really varied diet and it was super colorful and I was doing a good job. And then I saw my diary and half of my nutrition was coming from the ice cream I ate after dinner. And I was wow, I should really do better. And I also really enjoy cooking.
What are some of your staples?
I'm a sucker for a good rice bowl just because it's the easiest way to describe a mess on a plate. But rice is such a good base for any sort of roasted vegetable or pickled vegetables, and you can play around with different proteins. Just endless possibilities. Cool.
It sounds delicious. I might have to have a second lunch of that today. Switching gears entirely, you mentioned you were born in Japan. How long did you live there?
I was only there for 6 months. Both of my parents were active duty in the Air Force at the time. So I was born on a U.S. Air Force base in Okinawa. And then shortly after, they got transferred back to the States. So I don't have a lot of memories there, but I'm hoping that one day I can go back and just visit the base and just see where it was. Because it's such a cool, fun fact. My passport says born in Okinawa, because that's true. But I have no memory of it.
And so you haven't been back?
I have not.
Hopefully that's a post-COVID world bucket list item that you can check off soon.
Oh, yeah.
Jumping back to running, when you are far along in a race, call it a mile or 5K, what are you thinking about, three quarters of the way through?
That's pretty far in. I think that far into the race, you're starting to think about that finish line and you're starting to gauge where you're at versus where you wanted to be, and kind of going through that, or at least preparing to make that final big decision of how you want this race to go. Because if you have a quarter of the race left, you're almost done, but you still have enough time to if you're not in the right position, or if you're not where you want to be, or you don't feel how you want to be, that's definitely a time to make that decision and commit to it, because you don't really want to wait any longer to make that commitment.
Do you have any mantras that you think of when you race?
I wouldn't say I have any specific worded mantras, but the general vibe is you're not a quitter, I guess, would be one of them. And the other one would be well, don't waste all of the work you've already done. You've come this far is probably what I say to myself. You're 12 laps into a 5K and you're well, you've come this far. You're not going to walk it in.
I love that. I have a friend who I met through November Project in Boston, and he would run the stadium, and he would say if you were close to a PR, he'd be like, don't blow it now. You've worked this hard. And so I was in a phase of 5K training at that time. And so I would think of that 2.5 miles in, don't blow it now. You've worked this hard. And it worked. It's if you've done it for 2.5 miles, what's another couple minutes?
Exactly.
So talk to me about a time when you experienced something that some might consider failure, but you learned from it.
That's a good question. That some might consider failure. I think that's a tough one for me because I'm super tough on myself. So like, not that everything's a failure because I am like very positive about it, but I would say my senior year at ACC's, we were in Miami and Coach Hennis put me in the 10K. So I would only have to run one race at the beginning of that meet. And then I would have the rest of the meet off and I could like kind of enjoy Miami a little bit since I was missing graduation, which seemed like a nice thing at the time. Granted, I had not trained for the 10K. I missed my entire fall base with an injury. Like, I was definitely healthy enough to run it, but was I 10K fit? Not at all. So she convinced me to do this race, and I ended up third, which as a senior who could have potentially won like a conference championship, was really sad at the time. And I felt like I let my team down and I let myself down, and like there goes my whole like Wolfpack legacy. But at the same time, like, I hadn't been training that long. I hadn't had the miles under my belt. I toughed it out. I still ran like second lifetime PR in like 85 degree, 100% humidity conditions. The girl who won ended up setting the ACC record. So I was like very proud of myself after the fact, but it definitely took like a couple weeks for it all to sink in after the initial like, well, you blew your last chance at a championship.
And so what were those weeks, a couple of weeks like?
They were weird. Because like I said, like I had also missed graduation. So you kind of get that whole like 2020 hindsight where you're like, well, if I wasn't going to win, like, why didn't I just go to graduation? And just like annoying things like that, like floating around in your head. But then I like sat down with my coach and she was like, look, we weren't 100% ready for a 10K. Like, did it hurt you? No. Did it make you stronger? Yes. Was it everything you wanted? No. But are you better for having done it? Probably. and then by then it was time to shift focus to regionals and the 5K because she's like, well, this is like 5K regionals. Are you going to make NCAAs or not? And it's like, I want to make NCAAs. So like, get over it.
That makes sense. So fast forward 10 years, what are you going to be really proud of that you've accomplished?
Oh, 10 years. I feel like that's a lot of time. I think 10 years from now, honestly, this answer would probably change every year you asked it to me. But as it stands right now, I would probably say I'm super proud of what I think I helped to create at NC State. Like we've always had great coaches and great team members, but my freshman year, we didn't even qualify for cross country championship. And then by the time I was a senior, we had won ACC's twice. We had been fifth and fourth at NCAAs. And I feel like I left them in a great position and they've continued on that winning streak for the last 3 years. And I could not be prouder. And just to see like my teammates grow and change and just add to that legacy has been like such a source of pride for me.
That's awesome. The reason I asked this question is I have started to see some consistencies in successful people and what they focus on and what occupies their headspace. And almost every time, maybe the last 5 or 10 times I've asked this question, somebody answered or the person answered with something that was different than what I would have expected when I first started asking this question. It's basically been nothing about their own running and everything about who they're meeting and what they're doing and who they've helped and who's improved alongside them along the way. And
yeah,
it's really a privilege to be able to ask these types of questions because it's so different than like what many people focus on. Like many, if you ask an amateur this question, I'd say many would say, oh, I'll BQ or run Boston or, you know, PR my 5K or whatever. And it's really internalized. And and if that's your motivation to get out the door every day, that's great. I find the answer of highly successful athletes or people who are high performing in their career. I had Lindsay Krause on. She had, you know, some fascinating answers as well. I just find it really interesting how different but similar these answers are. So thank you for that.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that when you're talking about like 10 years from now, as in like, you kind of feel a little removed from it. So you're like, well, what's left? And it's like, yeah, your PRs and stuff will always be like on paper, but like, what are you really going to remember like vividly? And it's kind of like the impact you hope you left. Cause that's like the scary thing is like thinking you didn't have an impact on anybody or like anything.
Is that what keeps you going?
I would say so. I mean, I definitely like, it's not like so much a need to like be seen or be known. Like that doesn't really matter to me, but it's more like, am I affecting any change in this world in any way? Like, even if it's small, even if it's just one or two people, or maybe it's my club or my college team, you just like hope that you have had some sort of impact, obviously in a positive way. But that's definitely like a huge motivator for me.
I love that. So my grandfather passed away a year ago today. And the last conversation I had with him was around the meaning of life. So, you know, small talk. And he said that the meaning of life was to leave the world a better place than when you came into it. And that's exactly what you shared. And I think that, you know, the more people that hear that and the more people that believe that, the better this world can be.
Yeah.
So how does psychology play into your relationship with running? It looks like you studied psychology in school. So how do you take what you learned and apply that to life?
Yeah. I got my undergrad in psych, and I worked in a couple of undergraduate research labs, and I would say it's helped a lot and definitely made me a better person and definitely a better runner. Just kind of learning how other people work in general, like learning about the brain and emotions and all of those things kind of made me feel more normal. Like, I think sometimes when people have like negative feelings or like negative thoughts, they think like, oh, either I'm a bad person or I'm not handling this well, and they just think something's wrong with them. And I think learning about all that stuff for me made it a lot more normal. And it's like, oh, this is all part of like the normal human experience. Like, you're gonna have highs and lows, and everybody feels this way. It's just a matter of how you react to it. So I think it made me feel a lot more normal, and I was able to like recognize a lot of those like negative things a lot easier and like put words and terms to them, which in turn made it easier to deal with. And I was able to like kind of just carry that into like being an athlete, where it's like when you're struggling with motivation or you're down on yourself or lacking confidence, just learning that literally everybody feels this way and like you're not crazy was just a really big thing for me.
Yeah, I think that's a huge realization that people are having lately, that like nobody's life is perfect and everybody struggles. And the fact that everybody's struggling doesn't make your own struggle easier, but it's a little more, it's maybe reassuring, or you can relate to people better. I think it's important to recognize that.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has, even like, I would say in general, I'm like very happy with my life, but that doesn't mean some days I wake up and just like feel terrible. Like everybody has those days, and like, it's okay.
Definitely. What do you do on those days to get out of bed?
I I found it's been really helpful to just force myself to stick to my routine. So like I get up about the same time every day. I have my breakfast, I have my coffee, and then I get ready for practice. So the days I wake up and I'm like, God, I really don't want to do this. Or like, I don't know why I feel like I'm in such a bad mood. I just woke up. But things that I found to be helpful is just to force yourself to stick to that routine. Because I found like the longer I'm in that routine, like the more okay I feel. Because, you know, nothing's bad has happened. I just woke up. So then it's like, all right, like you might be in a bad mood, but just have your breakfast. And then you're like, okay. And then it's like, okay, have your coffee. And then by the end of that, you're like, okay, like I'll just do the next step. And then the next step and just take it one thing at a time. But it just gives me a sense of like normalcy and like things are going okay, even though I don't feel okay. And it's been super helpful.
Yeah, I think routine is super helpful for sure. Well, awesome. So if we want to follow along with your adventures, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram at I'm Tiny Rick. Rick spelled R-I-K. And my Twitter handle is also the same. Granted, I don't actually tweet from it very often because I forget that that's like a thing you can do. I do have a TikTok with the same name, but again, I do not use it. So Instagram just is the lurker. One I keep up with. Oh, for sure.
Awesome. Erica, well, thanks so much for taking some time to chat, and hopefully we can get some of those coffees at Temptation soon, because I will be back in Brookline and looking for coffee shortly.
Yes, for sure.
Awesome. Thanks so much and have a good one.
You too.